now.
No. Ryan plays chess. I'll let him
here,
do
step
that.
One.
No.
Here's the pawn.
And then I have to, I know, I don't even know any of the things. I'm like,
what
and
mean,
then
you
they're
don't even
like,
know the
like the rook. Isn't that a thing?
That is a thing. The rook, yeah.
And then when he was talking about the queen, he was like, well, the queen gets to do whatever she wants. And Ryan goes, that's real life, buddy.
This is a valuable life lesson.
You need to learn that now.
All right. Well, hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast, where we are exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday mornings. Mm-hmm. With me, I'm Patrick Nazaroff, and with me, as always, is Pastor David. Hi, Pastor David.
Hey, how you doing, Patrick?
Good. And Katie.
Hello.
Hi, Katie. All right. We are going to talk a little bit about the Christmas season or the pre-Christmas season. We're pre-gaming Christmas right now.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
Yes.
All right.
Yes, with Advent.
Christmas pre-game.
Yes.
I like it.
But before we get there, let me ask you guys a question. Have y'all ever played the game Monopoly?
Yes.
I have.
Yes.
Love the game Monopoly.
It's a big deal in my house right now.
Is it a family game? Do you have all played it as a family?
Yes. So, I mean, we play Monopoly Junior as a family because the kids are...
How is that different? I don't know.
Very simple. And it's like there's a new Monopoly Junior versus the one that I played when I was a kid. Because like the Monopoly Junior I played still had $1 bills, $2 bills, $3 bills, all the way up to $5.
Math. Yeah.
And now it's all $1 bills. And I was like, how does that even work?
It's not even math. What's
I know.
The point?
Like, what are my kids really learning right now?
Nothing.
1 + 1 = 2.
How to steal from your neighbor.
How to fight with one another.
Right.
Well, I assume if you've played Monopoly, you've probably gotten into an argument over Monopoly.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yes. Well, good news. This Christmas, Monopoly has set up a hotline for families to call in to deal with their Monopoly-related problems. Unfortunately, this news article does not give the number.
1-800-MONOPOLY.
Yes.
1-800-DON'T-GO-TO-JAIL.
Yes. But the survey has found that over 50%, 51% of all Monopoly games end in fights.
Oh, yeah.
Just like capitalism. This is a valuable life lesson.
Yes. And so on my list here, there are 10 things that people call in with their most... unknown fights. Do you want to guess what one of those 10 things might be?
Somebody cheated.
Well, somebody cheated is on there, yes.
Okay. What's the property value of a certain property? Like how much a certain property is supposed to be worth?
That is not on there.
No?
Yes.
What you get for going to free parking.
Free parking is on there. What are the rules of free parking?
There are a lot of different rules for free parking. Yes. Like depending on if you play Monopoly rules or house rules.
But here's the thing. No. But the thing is, shouldn't you set those with your group of people
but
you're playing
one does that.
With?
You just assume that everyone's
you start.
Playing your way.
Well, the number one rule that the argument that people call in over are people making up the rules as they go along.
Mm-hmm.
So it's setting the rules but then deciding
right.
Oh, no. Free parking, you should get this. Yes. Number two is people being too cocky when they win. So you got to call the Monopoly hotline to report your arrogant spouse
that is awesome.
For winning Monopoly. And number three here, someone buying a property you want, even if they don't need it.
Oh, jerks.
Yes.
Yeah. That is capitalism
at its best.
That's
the game of Monopoly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's the game of life, Katie.
Right, that too.
Yes. You know, people taking too long, stealing from the bank, miscounting their moves, arguing over who gets to be the banker, and arguing over the choice of tokens. Do you have a token preference?
The shoe.
I really don't have a token preference. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I'm all about the Scotty dog. That's the best
one. Yeah, the Scotty dog's cool.
And that's
in
Monopoly Junior.
The race car. Dog. Race car was always fun. I like the race car.
Race car's also in Monopoly. They only have 4 in Junior.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sounds pretty lame.
I know.
$1 bills and 4
$1 bills and 4 people.
Yes.
That's all.
It's not even a real game.
Yes. All right, so if you're having a Monopoly-related fight this Christmas, don't worry. Hasbro or whatever is there to help.
It's Parker Brothers, isn't it?
I don't know. Maybe you can call in to argue about that. Who made Monopoly? Well, tonight we are to talk about Advent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And so who's taking the lead on this?
I'll take this one.
Okay.
Not
all right,
it.
So, not it. All right. So Advent is the 4 weeks that we use in the church year leading up to Christmas Eve. And so, you know, commonly it kind of starts around December 1st because Christmas moves a little bit. Sometimes it's earlier or later. Sometimes a Sunday falls into November because Christmas might be at the end or beginning of a week, even though it's always December 25th.
Mm-hmm.
And so we take these 4 weeks as a church to prepare ourselves for what's going to happen in the coming of Christ. Advent, when we translate that, means coming or means arrival. And so we're using this time to think about preparing our hearts for the arrival of this mm-hmm. this birth, this Jesus that's going to be mm-hmm. born at Christmas. And so, you know, there are certain readings that always come with this during the church year. There's always one Sunday that's about the end of the world. There's always one Sunday that's about John the Baptist. There's usually a Sunday that's about Mary. And there's usually a Sunday that's about Elizabeth and Zechariah, though not in that order because that wouldn't make sense. So those are kind of the four Sundays we hear different stories. There are lots of different traditions that I'm sure we'll get into as we go through this podcast. But yeah, that's Advent in a mm-hmm. nutshell. It's taking time to prepare our hearts and our minds and our lives for the coming birth of Jesus.
Yeah, probably those traditions that we can talk a little bit about right now. Mm-hmm. Probably the most common one that people are aware of is maybe an Advent calendar.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. There are a lot of different kinds of Advent calendars.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to many stores to buy one right now. I think we saw like a Lego Advent calendar.
Sure.
There's a little bottle of wine Advent mm-hmm. calendar. So every day you get to enjoy a new bottle of wine.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. There are lots of ways to do that. Traditionally, they kind of came out of German European Christian traditions, and they were little like candy pieces. And you get each child would get a little candy gift each day that you opened up the calendar. And it's just another way of kind of counting down the days. Mm-hmm. They've kind of been, I don't know if culturally appropriated is the right word, but they've been taken on by non-practicing Christian parts of the culture to just be a way to count down to Christmas.
Sure.
But their real intention was to have every day be a focus of preparing for mm-hmm. Jesus, not just counting down to the days until presents or mm-hmm. whatever that might look like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Katie, do you have an Advent calendar at home?
We do.
Yeah. What is in your Advent calendar?
So we use the Advent calendars that the church gives us. We don't have like a special thing. Come on, it's Christmas season. They're going to get special fancy stuff.
Sure. Yeah.
So this kind of grounds us more than like, let's use it as another opportunity to mm-hmm. get something else. Mm-hmm. So the little doors on our Advent calendar that we get at church each year have like a scripture reading or something that happened in part of the story leading up to the birth of Jesus. So we just read that.
Yeah, that's great.
We keep it very simple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be mm-hmm. fancy and complicated. You know, simple mm-hmm. can be a really great thing. One of the things that's kind of central to Advent is that there's a lot of simplicity and kind of stripping away of some of the more complicated pieces of mm-hmm. Of worship life, kind of getting back to the basics and saying we're just going to prepare ourselves for this moment. So, you know, in worship, every week we'll light what we call an Advent wreath, and it's exactly what it sounds like. It's a wreath, and it has four candles, and every week we light a new candle. So you, over the 4 weeks of Advent, you end up lighting all four mm-hmm. candles. And that's something I grew up doing in my mm-hmm. home. I don't know if either of you did that at all, but we had a little Advent wreath that sat on our coffee table, and a couple times a week we'd get together as a family, we'd have devotionals, and my mom would light the candles, and that was part of our practice.
And each candle stands for something. So the first... Well, I just did a Sunday school lesson on this.
Well,
I know the answer. Pick me.
What do you got, Katie?
So the first candle, and in different churches, some churches use purple for Advent, mm-hmm. and then some churches use blue. We are using blue. Lord of mm-hmm. Life uses blue. So the first blue candle that you light is the candle of... Oh, goodness. I just did this.
Oh, goodness is not right.
Of hope. Hope. There you go. It's hope.
It's a hope candle.
And the second blue candle you light is the candle of preparation.
Okay.
And then the third candle is the pink candle, which is the candle of joy.
Sure.
And then the last candle is the blue candle, the candle of love. Yeah. And then sometimes you have a white candle in the middle, which is the Christ candle, right?
Mm-hmm. So why is the third candle a different color?
I mean, joy. Hello.
Okay, that doesn't really answer my question.
So it's not always. And depending on what kind of tradition or practice you're choosing to follow, sometimes they'll have a third candle that is pink or a different color, and sometimes they won't. And sometimes they'll say each candle represents something like hope, peace, or I guess you had hope, preparation, joy,
preparation.
Love. Sometimes it's hope, peace, joy, love. Sometimes it's like... the shepherds and the angels Mary and somebody else. So all of that has kind of been added on to this tradition. Originally, Advent wreaths were actually 24 candles. Or however many days were in Advent. And so you'd have
a quick fire right there.
Yeah. So the first one that we can trace back was in Germany. And it was a big, like, wagon wheel sized wreath that was in a town square. Because this priest, he wasn't Catholic, but this pastor was trying to teach his community about preparing for Christmas and using this Advent season. So he did this big wagon wheel thing, and he had four big candles on it that were the Sundays, and then little candles for every day in between.
Wow.
And so every day they lit another candle, and they did that all.
Now,
so,
did it stay lit for the entire, I mean.
I don't know if they lit it all day or if they lit it in the evening. Okay. Right, I was not there. I've given you the information that I have.
Sorry, just trying to imagine this.
No, that's fine.
How long do these candles burn?
You can imagine it however you want. But the point was, like, that's where it started. And then it got pared down to say, well, how can we do this in our home where we can have one candle for every week? And so that's something people can kind of manage and do in their home. And then we're like, well, what can we say this means? And probably once upon a time, some pastor somewhere said, we're going to do an Advent sermon series, and we're going to talk about hope, and then we're going to talk about peace, and then we're going to talk about joy, and then we're going to talk about love. And then every person who was in that congregation said, this is what it always has meant, and this is what it should always mean.
And joy is obviously pink.
Right. Joy is pink. why is it pink? There's not really a good reason. The reason is it used to be purple. Even when I was growing up, Lutheran churches were using purple, but then we realized that it was too confusing because it was a lot like Lent right before Easter, and we wanted to separate the kind of solemnness and confessional nature of Lent, where we repent and, you know, remember our sin, and turn towards a hopefulness of this coming birth in Advent. So we wanted to use a different color, so now we use blue.
Okay. Well, as we're continuing,
that was a long explanation. That was a long question that I'm not sure was asked.
You know, they can fast forward on their phones. That's right. Yes. So one of the things that we have fought about here in our office a little bit, or disagreed on.
We don't fight.
We disagree. Is part of this practice of Advent, of this preparation, is kind of we save kind of Christmas songs until Christmas Day.
Yes.
Correct.
Yeah. Yes.
In
the context of worship.
Yeah.
And I am, in many ways, the lone dissenter on this. And I think that that's weird.
I think you are the lone dissenter in staff. I do not think you are the lone dissenter within the congregation or the community at large.
Yeah, well, obviously, most churches do not do that. This is a...
Yeah, a lot of churches don't. Yeah.
Our most Protestant churches. Yes. Our many Protestant. Will not be waiting until Christmas Day.
A lot of even Lutheran churches will not wait.
Yes.
There are plenty of Lutheran churches who will be singing Christmas carols throughout the Advent season, or at least towards the end of the Advent season.
Mm-hmm. So, listeners, you can be on my side on this one.
Wow. Yeah. Just jumping right in.
Yes.
Because
I think it's weird that, like, kind of right now, our culture is celebrating Christmas. Whether we like it or not, Christmas is happening in our culture. Christmas carols are happening. You go into the stores, they're singing Christmas carols. They're giving you out holiday greetings.
The day after Thanksgiving, the radio stations play.
October, it was already playing.
Yes.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah.
And it seems like right when everybody is, and maybe some of us are already sick of that, but by December 25th, all of us will be sick of that. And that's when we as a church are like, great news, everybody. We've got Christmas songs for you.
Yeah. I do not deny that it's weird, right? I think that it's reasonable to say that it's weird that we don't, as a church, use Christmas songs sooner in the year. However, I think that the weirdness is valuable in that we have these weeks where we do wait, because sometimes, even just in the context of our everyday life, right, the hope and the joy that we trust God is going to provide is not yet here. We can't just jump to that point yet. We have to spend this time sometimes just sitting and waiting. And I think as a church, it's really valuable for us to step back and say, yeah, the culture is celebrating Christmas, sure, but we're celebrating from a different perspective, and we have to step back and think about what does this mean for us to prepare ourselves through this process. And hymns are one way that happens. It's not the only way. I don't think that anyone's going to turn over tables or Jesus is going to come back with lightning bolts and thunder to destroy us if we sing Hark the Herald Angels Sing on December 21st instead of December 24th or Christmas Day. But I think there's value in us separating that too, and not just saying, well, the culture is doing it, so we've got to go with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, it's more of a mindset of Christian, our Christmas music, Christmas hymns are kind of probably the one Christmas, our Christian form of art that the culture still celebrates.
Sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, that the culture mm-hmm. still wants to engage in. They still want to be a part of their everyday life. Usually Christian movies, Christian books, our secular culture has no interest in.
Yeah.
But a Christian song or a Christian Christmas song typically can transcend those lines.
Mm-hmm. Right. Which is why we have pop stars who record Silent Night. And
right.
For sure.
Oh, Come All You Faithful and whatever. Right. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. 2 years ago, my wife and I went to Fiesta Texas, which is a theme park in San Antonio during the Christmas time where they had the Christmas lights up. And they were playing Christmas carols there.
Yeah.
They did not participate in the war on Christmas, I guess. But they were singing Christmas songs.
Right. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like it's just weird if somebody from, and maybe part of the weirdness is we don't do a good job of that explanation.
That's fair. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And somebody who's celebrating Christmas in our culture comes into our church and it does not feel like we're celebrating Christmas the same way or what they expect.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're not getting that explanation, I feel like that would be a weird mm-hmm. transition to be like, what's happening here?
Yeah.
What are you waiting for?
Yeah. Well, and we talked about this just in our Thanksgiving episode. Was it right mm-hmm. before Thanksgiving, right? Where we talked about family traditions and the value of taking time to explain that. And so I'm sure that there are ways that we as a church and as a community can do a better job of mm-hmm. explaining this. But, you know, Lord of Life, the congregation that we serve here, kind of sits in the middle of this, right? Because so we are in the process of setting up our Christmas trees around the church this mm-hmm. weekend. You know, everything's going to be decked out. And we literally have an event called Deck the Hall. So they're literally going to be decking things out. We'll kind of be in that Christmas decoration mode all through the season of Advent. There are churches that I know who don't put up any Christmas trees until Christmas Eve.
Wow.
Or who don't put up, you know, the one of the church that I served back in South Carolina, they had a progression. And so the tree would be up for week one of Advent. Ornaments would be on it for week two of Advent. Mm-hmm. Lights would be on it for week three of Advent. And then something else happened for week four. I don't remember exactly. But
that's
so
how the church was at the church I grew up in.
Right. And so there's more progression mm-hmm. That goes with that. And I think I made this reference too before, right? Every church assumes that we're doing it the right way.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And that's where I think we get ourselves into trouble. Not just as congregations, but out in the community at large, right? If I go out to the mall and stand on a corner and yell at people for singing Christmas music before Christmas has come,
right.
I'm missing the point, right?
Mm-hmm. Right?
I should be rejoicing the fact that anyone is encountering a song that mm-hmm. has the opportunity to tell them about the story of Jesus. That should be a great thing, regardless of whether it's December mm-hmm. 1st or December 25th. But I think you're right. We need to do a better job of explaining within this context, what does it mean for us to step back from this and to spend time waiting and preparing and longing mm-hmm. for that to come.
And I think of it as, we just did the Sunday school lesson on Advent and what does Advent mean? And we used like a wrapped present that had mm-hmm. a tag on it that says, do not open until Christmas. Kids are used to that. Like, they're used to, you don't get to open your presents until Christmas Day or Christmas, whenever your family does it. But they have to know how to wait. Like, they can't just, you know, jump in and start opening things on December 3rd, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think sometimes as adults, we don't necessarily have that same opening presents excitement that children do.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, this is our time to wait. You know what I mean? It's our time to go, okay, really and truly, the best present ever is coming to us. Or, well, has come, but we're celebrating that it's coming.
has come, but we're waiting for it to come again.
Yes. Yeah, there's lots of waiting involved.
Yeah.
But I do think that it's a reminder for us as adults, you know, what is that like, that time of waiting?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're in.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and I want to maybe now transition away from our Advent discussion.
Okay.
If that's okay.
Hey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because we can disagree on whether or not we should sing Christmas carols whenever. But in this concept of waiting and maybe broaden this out beyond just the context of Advent, but what is the value as Christians in just this waiting period? Because probably culturally and maybe personally, waiting is hard, right?
Yeah.
Like, we're not good at waiting.
No.
Like, I find that as I get older, the less patient I get, you know.
Okay.
maybe it's different for you.
Yeah.
But now I find on red lights, it's mm-hmm. easier for me to be like,
come on.
Let me check my email.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, let me distract. Or I'm waiting in line at the grocery. Let me pull out my phone and distract myself. Like, because
yeah, sure.
Because just the idea of sitting and waiting is hard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So where are you guys on this? On just sitting and waiting?
Yeah. I think that's, I had not thought of it from that context. Mm-hmm. I think that's really valuable about how, I don't know if it's just because I'm getting older or because the culture around me is transitioning. But yeah, I'm much more anxious about just sitting and being still.
I feel like I should be doing something all the time. Yes. If I'm yeah. not doing something, then what am I doing with my life?
Yeah.
I'm
doing something wrong.
Right. Exactly. Like, why are we wasting a minute? Mm-hmm. Like, we're wasting a minute just sitting here waiting for what? Like, come on. So I don't do well with waiting at all.
Yeah, but I would agree. I don't think that I'm an expert at this by any means, and would probably say that I'm not good at it either. Mm-hmm. I want to be busy. I want to have things going on. I want to be aware of what's happening. The value, I think, is that taking the time to sit and to wait mm-hmm. draws us into an opportunity to experience things that are holy mm-hmm. that we would otherwise miss.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, so if we take that checkout line example, you know, I might be inclined to just get on my phone and be scrolling through and checking my emails while I'm standing in the checkout line. Whereas if I put my phone away and just stood and wait, I could hear the conversations around me, or I could experience mm-hmm. someone having joy or having grief, or an opportunity for mm-hmm. me to speak faith, or to just be present with mm-hmm. someone who's struggling, an opportunity for me to be gracious and allow someone who needs to go in front of me mm-hmm. to go in front of me mm-hmm. or to lend a dollar to someone who needs to buy something for whatever's going on. Mm-hmm. And I miss all of those opportunities mm-hmm. when I'm there. And so there's something holy about waiting, in that putting everything else aside and allowing ourselves to wait lets us enter into that mm-hmm. process with God, the things that God is
too,
already doing.
It's being present. I love that you use that word, because that's exactly what it is. So, I mean, mm-hmm. I sometimes worry too much about what's supposed to be happening tomorrow or the next day, or I have to get ready for this thing that I'm doing in a week. And it's like, that doesn't necessarily have to be the main focus right now. Like, right now, just sit, be still, stop, like just to slow down. And I think so much, especially at this, in the holiday season too, it's rushing. There's so much to do. I've got to do this and this and this. And so you miss out on being present and stopping and being still.
I also use, not technology necessarily, but I use those things that distract me from waiting to distract me from troubles or struggles or things that I'm wrestling with in life. Yeah. So I cannot stand driving around in my car. And I spend a fair bit of time in the car because, you know, I'm visiting people, going to hospitals, whatnot. I can't stand driving my car with silence. Mm-hmm. It drives me insane. And the thing that I've had to come to terms with is it drives me insane because it allows me time to think about the things that I'm angry about, or that I'm frustrated about, mm-hmm. or that I'm struggling mm-hmm. with. And I don't want to be thinking about mm-hmm. those things. Sometimes I legitimately can't allow myself to think about those things because I need to be in a different mindset to be present with what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
But other times the healthy choice would probably be to let myself listen, mm-hmm. to let myself be silent mm-hmm. and have that conversation with myself, with the Holy Spirit, with God in that place. But instead I make sure that my podcasts are loaded and ready to go, mm-hmm. or I make sure my radio's turned up, and mm-hmm. I just distract myself in the noise.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's just easy now that we have kind of the world at our fingertips at a moment's mm-hmm. notice, we miss out on the times of like, what is it like for me to just to sit in my own thoughts and to sit in my own and just imagine, or just mm-hmm. dwell, or just think about what's going on in my own life, to self-reflect. And I think mm-hmm. sometimes that's harder and harder to do mm-hmm. Within the context of mm-hmm. our culture.
Yeah. And I mean, if we bring this back to Advent just a little bit, what does it mean for us as a community and as individuals to say, we're going to take this 4 weeks to take waiting seriously?
Yeah.
Right.
And maybe that we talked about taking like one small step, mm-hmm. in a previous episode. Maybe that means like, all right, we're not going to turn on our podcast every time we get in the car, mm-hmm. which might be a self-defeating proposition for me to recommend on a podcast, but maybe that's a path that we have to take. Or maybe it's that we have to turn off the TV 15 minutes earlier mm-hmm. before we mm-hmm. go to bed, or mm-hmm. Whatever that might look like for us. What does it mean, just like you said, Patrick, to give ourselves that space mm-hmm. to wait, to sit.
All right. Well, I have a question for y'all.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of a sillier question.
All right. I like silly questions.
But what is our favorite Christmas song? Let's talk. Let's.
Jeez. What is our favorite Christmas song?
Well, hey, okay. So I have two different categories. Like,
give me whatever one you want to give me. I'll go first.
All right. Okay. You go first.
I genuinely love All I Want for Christmas Is You by Mariah Carey.
What is wrong with you?
I think it's a great song.
Okay, go ahead. No, yeah. I'm not really going
to. Who is the you that you want for Christmas?
You know, it doesn't matter. It's, well, I'm married, so it's like I already have a wife that I've gotten
That's
for Christmas.
Good. Yeah.
You know, so. I also love Santa Claus Is Coming to Town by the Jackson 5.
That's a good, okay. That's a good rendition of Santa Claus.
Yeah, I think they did a good job.
Yeah, they did that justice. Hmm. All right. Yeah. I'm going to have to give this one some thought. Katie, what are your ideas?
I don't know how long ago it came out. So Faith Hill came out with A Baby Changes Everything. Have y'all heard this?
No.
No, I've not.
No, you have to. All right. You have to listen to it. It's like...
Homework
it,
assignment. Listen to Faith
really
Hill's
good.
Baby Changes
like,
Everything.
Really good.
Okay.
Is it like when you have a baby, you change everything? Like you're just constantly changing diapers?
No, just listen to it. Okay. If you haven't listened to it, podcast listeners, listen to it. Because I can't even tell you. Like... Okay. I cried. I mean, that's not shocking.
That's, yeah.
But
not a high bar.
It's great. So that's like a more
contemporary,
modern, like,
yeah.
Sure, but sure. If I went like old school,
like a hymn, yes.
Like my favorite hymn, It Came Upon a Midnight Clear.
Oh, that's a good one.
Like, I love, yeah. I don't know why, but I just love that one.
Yeah.
But right now we're kind of rocking out to Go Tell on the Mountain a lot.
Sure,
Shelby, yep. Like that is my daughter.
That was definitely my favorite as a kid.
She loves it.
I love Go Tell on the Mountain.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Mom, can we play Go Tell on the Mountain again? I'm like,
Is that the way you bang two sticks together?
What?
That's what I did in elementary school, I think, when we sang that. We like banged two sticks together.
Rhythm sticks?
Yeah, yeah.
To make sure you had the steady beat. Yeah. That's good.
That sounds fun. Yeah. So if we're doing hymns, you know, this is going to sound lame, but honestly, my favorite is Joy to the World. Lyrically, if we're doing exclusively Christmas hymns, since we're now past Advent, apparently, but if we're doing Christmas songs, I just really love the message of Joy to the World. And it's simplistic and it's traditional and it's I love that. As far as like stuff that I would hear on the radio, I really don't have a favorite. I don't listen to Christmas music on the radio. I pretty much exclusively listen to Christmas music in church on Christmas Eve and maybe the Sunday after Christmas. That's pretty much the only time that I want to hear Christmas music. And that's not a faith statement. That's just a personal music preference.
And if you're a parent with young children, you need to listen to Amy Grant's I Need a Silent Night. Because, yeah. Or if you're a parent in general, you need to listen to that.
I Need a Silent Night? Mm-hmm. Is it like a joke song or is it like a
It's a great song.
Okay.
Another one of my favorites.
It sounds like a parody.
It does.
It is. Yeah. I mean, well, yeah. But no. I mean, it's... You'll get it. Listen to it.
All right.
And then email me your feedback. I'm just kidding.
BeyondSundayPodcast@gmail.com.
Tell us your favorite Christmas song. Yes. All right. Well, I think this is going to bring us to the point in the podcast where we give a recommendation.
It is.
I just gave a bunch.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Those are our pre-recommendations. Advent is the pre-Christmas. Now we're pre-recommendations.
Right.
Yes.
I've got an actual recommendation.
Okay. You do that.
Yeah. Katie can have her pre-recommendations. So my recommendation is over these next 4 weeks, choose one spiritual practice that you want to pick up and find someone who can hold you accountable and try it. Mm-hmm. Whether that's praying every day for 2 minutes or reading a Bible verse every day or lighting a candle once a week, whatever that might be. But take 4 weeks between now and Christmas Day and give it a shot. And then let us know how it went.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Send us an email.
Okay.
Post on our Facebook page.
How can they let us know?
How can you let us know? You can send us an email at BeyondSundayPodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook, Beyond Sunday Podcast. You can send us a picture on Instagram at Beyond_Sunday.
I don't think that's how Instagram works. You don't send people pictures on Instagram.
You can post a picture and tag us
Ooh,
in it.
There you go.
At Beyond_Sunday. You can find us online at BeyondSundayPodcast.com. Did I forget anything? I think that's all of it.
I think that sounds about right.
Yeah. Get in touch with us. We want to hear from you. Be sure to rate and review us on your favorite podcast providers, Apple, iTunes,
Spotify,
the Google, all of them. They're all
Google
there.
Play.
Google
the
Play.
Google.
Yeah, it's all there. Everything you've ever wanted so that you can appropriately prepare your hearts and minds for this podcast.
Yes.
And for Christmas.
Oh, right. And for the birth of Jesus.
All right, well, happy Advent, everyone. We hope you enjoy this waiting time for Christmas. That's all we got.
Right. Happy Advent.
Hey, podcast listeners, as a special bonus today, we have a sermon that Patrick gave for our midweek Advent service here at Lord of Life on our first Wednesday of Advent. He's going to be talking a little bit more about waiting, and so we hope that you enjoy this opportunity to hear a little bit more about what it means to spend some time waiting in this Advent season.
The days are surely coming, says the Lord, when I will fulfill the promise I made to the house of Israel and the house of Judah. In those days and at that time, I will cause a righteous branch to spring up for David, and he shall execute justice and the righteousness in the land. In those days, Judah will be saved and Jerusalem will live in safety. And this is the name by which it will be called. The Lord is our righteousness.
Please join me in a quick word of prayer. Heavenly Father, thank you for this evening you've blessed us with. Be with us now as we open up your word to examine it, look at it, and help it shape, change, and mold us as we draw near to you in this time and space. In your name, amen. One of my favorite movies is part of a trilogy called The Lord of the Rings. And I love the second movie in there called The Two Towers. In this movie, the major climax, the final sequence in this movie is a long battle at Helm's Deep. And in this battle, the heroes of the story, along with the armies of men and elves, have retreated into Helm's Deep, the fortress against the mountain range, as the armies of Sauron and Saruman descend upon them. Their armies are the orcs, the Uruk-hai, goblins, and I know that sounds pretty nerdy, but it's a really incredible sequence. Well, in this sequence, as night falls and the invading army approaches, you see that the heroes are outnumbered and scared because they will probably lose. That they're against an army five times greater and more savage than they thought possible. And throughout the night, you'll see them act heroically, and yet they keep retreating further and further within to the castle. As the walls are breached, the towers blown up, and the door to the keep knocked down. Towards the end, when only a handful remain, they hold up in the throne room of the king. And there, they're at their weakest moment where they think, there is no more hope left. We have failed. And the armies of evil have won. And they decide at that moment, we will ride out. We will get on our horses and ride out on one final charge into this invading army. So our heroes mount up. They ride out on horseback into the invading army, and at that moment, the sun rises in the distance. And with the coming sun is the wizard Gandalf and his own army, the Riders of Rohan, have come, and they annihilate the forces of the orcs. It's an incredible sequence. I know my storytelling ability does not do it justice. It's a 45-minute battle, and we summed it up in 3 minutes. So I think if you've never seen Lord of the Rings, it's pretty incredible. But that movie gives us this illustration of what it means to wait for the dawn. And in our video we saw, the word that we're looking at today is dawn. And we've experienced that. And in the story, or the scripture passage that Malia read for us, also has an image of waiting for dawn. Jeremiah the prophet is giving a message to the people of God who have been conquered and captured and removed from Israel and taken to Babylon. And their kingdom has been smashed, the lineage of kings cut off, and the temple destroyed, and they are removed from their homes into a new place. And Jeremiah is giving them a promise that what once was destroyed will now be put new, that the lineage of kings can come back, the temple rebuilt, and that they, though they are far away from home, they will get to go back to the coming dawn.
And that's a beautiful picture and image of this idea of a rescuing king coming to rescue those that have been captured and carried far away. Or a beautiful image of picture of when all hope is lost, salvation appears with the rising sun. But for most of us who've experienced dark times, a lot of the time spent in darkness is spent waiting and waiting for that dawn to come. I mean, we even have a phrase here, this kind of a colloquialism, like it's always darkest before the dawn. And that means we recognize that it sometimes gets dark. And in that darkness, sometimes we wait for rescue. And I don't know about you, but I am not a very good waiter. I don't like to wait. I don't like to sit and wait. And maybe you are different than me, but I find myself, as even I get older, waiting less and less. Now when I drive home and I'm stopped at a red light and I'm bored waiting, it's very easy for me to say like, well, I'll just check my email on my phone right now. The light's red, it's okay. Or I'm at the grocery store and I'm waiting to check out and I'm bored and it's easy for me to be like, well, I'll check the sports scores or see what's going on Instagram. And I don't know what it is for your waiting looks like. Maybe if you send a Snapchat to a person that you may have romantic feelings for and you see that they've opened it and read it but have yet to respond, that's a waiting period that's tough. And if you're, I'm not sure what Snapchat means, that's okay. That's for over here. Yeah. Yeah. For our confirmation students. And those are maybe simple examples of waiting. But for maybe for you, you're waiting for a diagnosis from the doctor, or that this round of treatment has brought good news. Or you're waiting for family reconciliation, and you've been waiting for a long time for that. Waiting for good news to appear when everything has fallen apart around you. Waiting can be hard. Last Christmas, I got the privilege of leading our college students on a mission trip. We went on, I guess, the closest thing we Americans have to a pilgrimage, because we went to Disney World. That's the closest thing I think we've got. Yeah, so we didn't just go to Disney World. We were there to serve the Give Kids of the World resort, which is where like Make-A-Wish kids stay. But we did go to Disney one day, and Disney had a new ride opening. And I had done my research, and it said this new ride, which is really fancy and high-tech, was going to have a wait of 4 hours to ride this ride. 4 hours. And that does not sound like the happiest place on earth to me. And I don't know about you, but I looked at a four-hour ride, and I was like, that's not an option. I'm not going to wait 4 hours for any experience. And so my solution to that, which my college students did not find fun at the time, was we woke up at 5 a.m. to go to Disney early, 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 before the park even opened. We were there, ready for this ride. And we rode it, and it was amazing. It was everything was cracked up to be. And right after we got off, the wait was 4 hours. So we did our part there. Because waiting is hard. It's hard for me, and I thought it's hard for you. The theologian Tom Petty is going to tell us, waiting is the hardest part. And I think we get that. Waiting is tough. And so what do we do in this waiting space? Right now, in this season of Advent, which is a season of waiting, a season of preparation, what do we do? Whether we're waiting for Christmas and gifts, or waiting for Christmas to be over, or we're waiting for rescue from all that has happened to us, what do we do? And I've come up with a few things. So the first thing I've thought of, what we do, is we be active in our waiting, not passive. Just like our heroes in Lord of the Rings ride out in waiting, we do the same thing. And that means during this time of Advent, an active waiting can be now practicing a new spiritual discipline that we have not engaged in or not done a very good job of engaging in. And that may be taking time to pray. That may be taking time to light candles and just think about God in our days. Time when we're stopped at the red light to, instead of looking at our phones or putting on music or a podcast to sit in silence and wonder. Those are new spiritual disciplines that we can all adapt during this sense of waiting. And the other thing I thought about what it means for me to wait is not just taking on something, but letting go of something else. And the things I need to let go of are maybe similar to what you need to let go of. I need to let go of my pride and judgment during this waiting period. Or I need to let go of my expecting God to only work under my direction. For me to say, God, there's only one way you can intercede in my life, and it's blank, and I'm waiting for you to do it. Sometimes that means I have to let go of my own expectation, or let go of my anger, or let go of my longing for someone to apologize to me, which may not happen. I recently read this book by this Catholic priest named Henry Nouwen. And at the end of his life, he decided to leave his priesthood and travel with the circus in Europe. When I was a kid, I went to the circus, and I wanted to be a part of the circus. That was my life goal when I was 5, was to join the circus one day as a trapeze artist. They were the stars of the show for me as a kid, and for Henry Nouwen, they were the star of the show as well. So he lived with a family of trapeze artists and traveled with them for a year. One day, the patriarch of this family, the star of the show, was talking to Henry and said, "When the crowd comes to watch us perform, they get to see me swing from the trapeze, let go, do all my flips and spins and all these things, and be caught on the other side, and the crowd cheers and goes wild. I'm going to let you in, Henry, on a little secret. And that is, I am not the star of the show. The star of the show is the person on the other side, the one who catches me, because they have to make sure their timing is right. They have to make sure they're seeing what I'm doing. They have to make sure that they're grabbing my hand." He says, "I just let go, and the catcher does everything." And that's a powerful statement for us, I think, as Christians. This idea that I let go of whatever that is for you, and the catcher does everything. My wife and I are waiting right now. We are expecting our first child in April. And this is exciting and terrifying. This is a unique experience because I cannot compare it to anything else I have ever done in life. Is this moment right now, what this will look like. And this excitement looks like we get to decorate a nursery, paint a room, pick out themes, colors, furniture, get all excited about those things. And it's also terrifying because I know my life will never be what it was before. And soon I'll hold a baby and I'll say, "I have no idea what I'm doing." And the nurse is not going to come home with me from the hospital to tell me how to do things. It'll just be up to her and I. And that's a scary prospect. But I think in this waiting, we are seeing what it looks like to let go and trust that the catcher will do everything. Because that's what it means to look for the dawn. Looking for the dawn is saying, "God, right now, my life is hard. And it's difficult, and it's unfair. And I want it to be better, and it's just not getting there." And so right now, in this waiting space, I will try a new spiritual practice, and I will trust that when I let go, the pierced hands of Jesus catch me. And they are stronger than I ever thought possible. And when Jesus comes in the dawn, it is brighter than I ever imagined.